yeah, that was, started off as Cleo Soul. And then it ended in a song that Dion wrote. He has his best visions at night, I believe, is when he wrote it. And then we played it one time. We only practiced that one time, at least the second part. So it was mostly free form. But yeah, a little process of how we jam. We'll start with a groove, and then, at least from my perspective as a drummer, I listen for when David changes his bass line, and then I try to make a groove that fits better with whatever bass line he's doing. And then, typically, Dion will be in control of, like, the chord progressions and where we're going. John always has got, like, a lick up his sleeve. I feel like he's got the licks, a nice little rhythm guitarist. But you'll see him, you'll hear him solo more. But definitely, David and Dion definitely soloed the most in that song. And the type of groove we were doing was Dilla. I don't know if you know Jay Dilla. He's a famous producer. And he came up with that swing. It's like a quintuplet. So it's like I'm playing in like a swinged, it'd be like I'm playing five notes instead of four in the typical bar. And it sounds cool over everything else, and it sounds cool in like a more hip-hop-ish groove. So yeah, now we're gonna do, what are we gonna do?
Some jazz.
We're just gonna do some jazz, I guess. We're gonna do a song. This is a song that Dion and I wrote. It has different time signatures, so it starts in 4, and then it goes to 5-4, and then it goes to 6-4, and then it goes back into 4-4. So you will hear that if it sounds, the one isn't right where it's supposed to be. That's why. Yeah, it's a good time. This is there's no name for the song. It's just like wacky song or whatever. Okay.
Thank you.
That was fun. We actually literally played that song once for Battle of the Bands and then never played it again. So that was your first, that was our first time playing it in a minute. But it was fun. It sounded fun. We have an Instagram. It's steel.yams, and there's like with a Z. Okay, steel.yams with a Z. Yeah, and you'll see an AI generated picture of a potato, and that's the yam. It's
we changed it.
Never mind. There's a different picture. Just forget that I said that.
It's a drawing.
Oh yeah, somebody drew us. It's that, which is way cooler anyways. Let's just move on. So now we're going to do... Yeah, okay. We're gonna bring it back to the mid-2000s with a song by Childish Gambino called Redbone. Thank you. That was Redbone by Childish Gambino. And then Keys took a solo by Dion, and then John took a solo on the guitar, and then David made it nice and funky with the bass. Yeah, so now we're going to play a song by Stevie Wonder. Yeah, we actually played it yesterday for Earth Day. Shout out Earth Day. Help the planet if you feel like it. So this is by Stevie Wonder. It's Isn't She Lovely? Isn't She Lovely? It's a chill song. It's nice and swung. It's like a nice little shuffle. I think he wrote this about his daughter. We don't have children, thank God. I don't think y'all have children, do you? Yeah, so we're chilling. Again, we're still yams. Follow our Instagram, steel.yams with a Z on Instagram. We have an Instagram. You know. Yeah. Whatever. Are you guys ready? I was just rambling for a second because they were getting ready. Okay, let's go. cool. Yeah. A little bit info on IMO. We met, our band met at IMO jam session at the beginning of the semester. So we only had a semester to play together. What does it stand for? Yeah, okay. So IMO is Independent Musician Organization, which basically means that students not necessarily affiliated with like a jazz band or music majors or part of like music clubs on campus still have a space to play music and express themselves. It's been really cool. They have a lot of cool events. The last thing that just happened was hackathon. Hack a song. And then before that, they had, we played at Carnival, and we also played at Mr. Roboto, which was a pretty cool place, cool vibes. Yeah, and then we jammed together for the Battle of the Bands, and that was really cool. It was cool to meet all the other bands, too, and see, like, which groups have come together, especially, like, on a Saturday when we have jams, you kind of just mix with everybody, so it's cool to see which bands, like, formed, like, a solid thing and hear different music styles. Yeah, and it's a really cool experience. I know for me, it's been fun to see and, like, learn other bands' songs. So then when I come and support, we can, like, sing each other's songs now, and that's really fun. Yeah, so that's a little bit about IMO. Yeah, we're going to play two more songs. Yeah, okay, so we're going to do one last little funky jam for you, and then we're going to finish with our big banger of a song that Dion wrote. Yeah, so we're going to just funk it up, I guess. I'll explain a little bit of what's happening right now. Dion and John are figuring out chords and stuff like that, and yeah, then we'll figure out a time, what tempo we want to do it. Okay, Dion's just gonna start playing, so. Thank you. cool. That was our little funky jam. Yeah. Now we're going to play a Dion song. We do have words to it, but it doesn't matter because it's a vibe and you just sing what's in your heart. Okay. We're Steel Yams. Thank you, WRCT, for having us. It's been a pleasure. It's been really fun. It's been a great experience. Yeah, and have a good night.
Forbes Avenue is a production of WRCT Pittsburgh. The opinions expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of WRCT, its members, or Carnegie Mellon University. Email questions or comments to pa@wrct.org.
Hello, you're listening to Forbes Avenue on WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM. I'm your host, Arshan Das, with my co-host,
Kate Smiggy.
And today we're going to be interviewing Max Gonzalez, also known as Gems.
Hi.
Max is a graffiti artist and muralist in Pittsburgh. He has a pretty interesting story. So I guess we'll let him lead it off. Tell us how you got into graffiti.
Yeah. So I am a full-time muralist, but I always make the distinction to say that I'm like first and foremost a graffiti writer. So like I have a very like graffiti, like traditional hip-hop lettering background. I'm originally from Southwest Side Chicago. I grew up painting there and just like seeing like graffiti everywhere I was from, because the neighborhood I'm from is Pilsen, and it's just like this very historic Chicano community that's just covered in graffiti. So I just naturally saw it everywhere I was. So even like as far as like starting to draw graffiti, like I don't even know how old I was because I just was mimicking what I saw and what I thought graffiti was. I very much so have always had graffiti in my life. I didn't really start to like try to actually paint and get a name in graffiti until I was about like 15. I think like the first time I used spray paint though, I was like 13, just coming from like a construction background and doing vandal type things with my dad and my brother. And yeah, from there, around like later in high school is when I started to actually really try to push it more, try to do pieces and things. But it really was when I moved to Pittsburgh for college and didn't have like parental control and kind of had free reign that I really, really started to push graffiti. So that was like age 18. I started writing gems. Before that, I was writing all kinds of other things, but gems is like really what stuck out to me and just unfamiliar to me and just kind of hating the college format I was in. I kind of didn't like to hang around a lot. So every night I would just go paint on things and put my name everywhere. So in a way, like me having graffiti was an access to like my upbringing to Chicago and kind of like that culture that I was brought up with. So being able to like export that to Pittsburgh and like pull from that inspiration. But yeah, so the whole time through college, I was not doing graffiti as my art form for Carnegie Mellon, but it was still always there.
Yeah, so you studied at Carnegie Mellon, like we are current Carnegie Mellon students. A lot of times when you're around campus, you hear people talking about how the environment here is somewhat depressing or suffocating. Everyone has their own opinions on that, but how do you think the environment of Pittsburgh and Carnegie Mellon contributed to your art?
Yeah, if anything, it was kind of good that I had such a distaste for CMU, just because it forced me to seek like the actual Pittsburgh communities outside of the campus areas. Just because, I don't know, like coming from where I'm from, like I'm not poor or anything, but I come from a working class family and like work construction my whole life. So coming here and like even during school, like working two different jobs, like working at a restaurant and then like working construction during the summers, like I just couldn't really culturally attach myself to a lot of the other people here, where I was just seeing people who literally princes and princesses, and I was just kind of like, oh my god, and like children of like CEOs, and it just like was very difficult for me to attach myself to that, especially coming from like Chicago and kind of loving the more city nitty gritty side of things. But yeah, so that did push me to eventually start looking into seeing the rest of the East End. So really, I've always like prided myself on like being very attached to the East End of Pittsburgh. So like East Liberty, Bloomfield, Garfield. Yeah, and from there, finding places like Time Bomb Shop, which used to be on Highland Ave, which is like a historic hip-hop graffiti store, and Daily Bread, and finding all those friends there. Thank you to CMU for pushing me away.
I think it's sometimes great on artistic journeys to find inspiration from life and to find inspiration sometimes from those struggles that you face. And I feel like that's the uncomfortable part of the artistic journey. But when you're creating graffiti, what are you thinking about in terms of style and colors? Like, what do those artistic choices look like? Or do you come up with a design beforehand? Or
yeah, I mean, I would say there's definitely a distinction for me between like my graffiti and my muralism or spray can muralism. As far as graffiti inspiration, like letters, a lot of the inspiration for me does come from Pittsburgh. It wasn't until I moved to Pittsburgh that I had people who were willing to critique my style and tell me like that I sucked for the first time. And I was like, oh, wow, like I just assumed because I know how to draw, I must be good at graffiti. And it's kind of like, well, no, like graffiti is a typographic art form. It's based in lettering and this long history of hip hop. It even predates hip hop, and so I can't reinvent something that's already been mastered and that has this super strong history tied to it. It'd be wrong for me to reject the culture that it comes from young black and brown kids from New York and Philadelphia. Yeah, so I'm always looking to that as a reference point, like original subway graffiti, just wall graffiti, as far as like what I'm contributing to my style writing. And even in my murals, I try to push for there to be as much of a graffiti presence as possible. So any point that I get to introduce traditional graffiti styles into my art, I'd gladly accept it.
It's interesting that you mentioned the different scenes that exist in graffiti from different cities. I wanted to ask you, what are some of the regional differences that exist between what you saw in, say, Chicago and here in Pittsburgh? And how does that influence your style?
Yeah, there absolutely is like a huge distinction between different cities' graffiti styles. Like I even said, like there's a little bit of a contention between who started modern style writing, whether it was Philadelphia or New York, but they both started around the same time in the late 60s. Philadelphia has a very, very distinct style for their like very tall, elongated letters. Even all of their like pieces look like that. It's called a style called Wickeds. And it's just like this very, very gestural style that you probably couldn't even read if you weren't from Philadelphia. Where New York is known for like these rounder, more funky styles. And even being that Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, they're in the same state, yes, they're opposite ends. It's just interesting to note that Pittsburgh does not have a Philadelphia style. Pittsburgh has a bit of his own style, kind of with the advent of Instagram and the internet, styles have started to be diluted a bit. Philadelphia still has its style, but all the styles are kind of meshing a lot. The one thing with Chicago's style is that it actually kind of is very similar to LA's style because of a history of a Chicano and Cholo movement there, where a lot of the original graffiti from LA is referencing kind of like old English styles, and a lot of gangbangers from back then would be riding in that style. So even before style riding was a thing that existed. So a lot of these almost gothic, pointy, like very aggressive looking styles of graffiti were present in LA, and being that there was a large movement of Chicano and Cholo people in Chicago and kind of like migration between the two places, they share that style. Where definitely though, if you go to the south side of Chicago, it's a lot more noticeable, where the north side, it's just kind of like a contemporary mix of all styles. It's Chicago definitely would not have its style if it wasn't for the Mexican-American culture that's present there. Pittsburgh, being that it has zero Mexican-American culture, besides like me and two other people, it was more receptive towards like funky styles, but also like hardcore punk styles.
Is there anything about placement of the actual lettering that differs in cities, or is it just styles? Like, are there certain places where people tend to tag more often than others based off of regional differences, or have you not seen that?
Yeah, it definitely is a regional thing where, so even when I first moved here, I was like, oh my God, no one here paints rooftops really, where I love rooftops, and rooftops are super common in Chicago, where you just like climb up a roof and find a sidewall and like paint something up there. That was like one of my favorite challenges, is like finding a roof. And one thing I was taught by one of my friends is like, you can always find a way up onto that rooftop. Just like, if you give up, then you failed. It's just like, there's always a way. It taught me to climb really well. I can't climb as well as I used to though, but even if you go to New York or Philadelphia, a lot of box trucks are painted. That hasn't caught on in other cities like Pittsburgh, just because it kind of would take an overnight shift of like everyone painting box trucks for it to not stick out like a sore thumb. It's just kind of, people have always painted those. Pittsburgh doesn't have subway cars. We have the T, and that actually was painted once at one point, and everyone got arrested. Pittsburgh is actually a bit well known for its like freight graffiti. Like freight trains. So it was like people like Prism, Nexki, others from that era, from like NSF crew, who started pushing freight graffiti super heavily. And unfortunately, because Pittsburgh's lost a lot of its industry, a lot of our freights have gone too. So we've definitely fallen from the ranks as being like a freight graffiti city, just because we don't have those surfaces quite as much anymore. But there still absolutely is that history there. Other cities like if you go to like LA or Chicago, people love to wild out there, and people love to paint the fronts of like more corporate or franchised businesses. So like a Dunkin' Donuts or a Subway or just kind of like a Motorola store or whatever, just kind of like blast it, and like, and it gets removed very quickly, but it's just kind of like this more lawless, reckless style out there.
Yeah, so kind of on that topic, I would be interested to hear a little bit more about the legal challenges to graffiti and whether or not you think graffiti can be positive or negative for a community, and what are some of the effects of it?
Yeah, I mean, so sometimes people will bring up the argument like, is graffiti vandalism? And it's like, yes, absolutely. Of course it's vandalism. But I don't think vandalism is a disqualifier for something being art. Just because something is illegal doesn't mean it can't be art. If anything, a lot of art is born from illegal activities or what might have been illegal at that point. So it's, it would be best to tell anyone like, yeah, all laws are off and go paint whatever you want. But usually what the best situation for graffiti is when the graffiti writers and the community have a common dialogue. So the more that the graffiti writers can see themselves as a part of the community, the less they see themselves as the villain. So the more that the community says, you guys are the evil graffiti villains, and vilify that person, the more they'll say, yeah, you know what, I am awful and I'm going to ruin your day. There are unspoken rules in graffiti where it's like, don't go over places of worship, no places of education, no playgrounds, no cemeteries, not the front of anyone's house. But yeah, it's a lot of times when you see people doing vandalism or what we call civilian graffiti on places that it shouldn't be or that are like very destructive and inconsiderate to a community, it's typically not a person that is from the graffiti writing community. It's someone that is some kid or some adult or some drunk adult that is just out there seeking to destroy something in that one moment, and they might not ever do graffiti ever again in their life. So a lot of those incidents do give graffiti a bad rap. And really with graffiti, it's no one's out there thinking or saying, I want to go paint racial slurs or something like awful or make someone feel bad. It's here's my identity. I've developed this name into my identity. I'm proud of this identity. Or even in Pittsburgh, a lot of the queer and furry communities have started taking up graffiti a lot. And I see that as like a very obvious sign of like agency over identity, or even for furry communities and queer communities, being a furry, that is agency over identity. Choosing a different name for a queer person, it's writing your own narrative and deciding how it's being told, and in what visual aesthetics it's being told in. Graffiti is just the same, where if I want to put up the name Gems Everywhere and I'm doing this very specific style, these very specific locations with the specific character, that's how you're wanting to be interpreted by the community. And even if you go back to the origins of graffiti, it really was disenfranchised youth who didn't see their voice out there in the world. Graffiti's always been around. It always will be around. Even if you go back to caveman times, there's always been graffiti. Roman times, there were always scribes into walls. And